The concept of the inner child got quite a workout in public a number of years ago, and maybe that Eagles song that made a reference to wanting to beat up somebody's inner child brought the discussions to a swifter close than they deserved. In fact, the discussion never ended, and today's guest builds upon the inner child concept with one of her own, the concept of the outer child. Susan Anderson lays out the details in her book, Taming Your Outer Child, Overcoming Self-Sabotage and Healing from Abandonment. Susan Anderson is a psychotherapist now practicing for 30 years, assisting people with trauma, grief, and loss. And she's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Jeff.
I understand you're also the founder of the Abandonment Recovery Movement. Can you tell us a little bit about that first?
Yes. Well, abandonment is actually the source of most of our self-sabotage because it creates that kind of bubbling under the surface need that we tend to fill with too much food, too much wine, too much spending, too much procrastinating. So it's really the underlying issue of self-sabotage.
So let's set up the further discussion. The inner child versus the outer child. Tell us the difference between them.
Well, the inner child would be your feelings. That's the emotional part of the personality. And that's the part that contains your nearly unconscious abandonment feelings, which can become conscious as we go through the day, and it gets tweaked by feeling maybe left out or neglected or not understood. And that's the emotional part of the personality, the feelings, inner child. And then the outer child is the part that acts out those feelings inappropriately. So the outer child is more the behavioral part, the part that sabotages your diet, your bank account, and your life.
Let me back up a step, because when we're talking about abandonment, who are we often, or what, are we often feeling abandoned from or by?
Well, abandonment is a universal fear that resides within the human being. We're not always conscious of it. It's not always active, but it can be activated when, in the workplace, for instance, where we feel maybe we're not getting the recognition that we need. It can be activated in friendship when we feel that we don't have the image that we wish we had with our friends, or it can be activated, really activated, in our love life. If there's rejection, that abandonment fear comes right to the surface and creates very, very strong emotional reactions. So it's really a universal part of us. We all have it, but we're not always feeling it, but it can be easily triggered.
But it sounds like not necessarily easily recognized, so that people might think, well, boy, my friends are really being jerks right now, not realizing that what they're really feeling is something they might have felt years and years ago with mom or dad.
Yes, it can come from all kinds of childhood experiences, but it can come from just birth, the birth trauma of having a memory in the body of a sudden disconnection. So let's say you have a little thing going on with your friends and you have this very strong reaction. And you wish, you don't realize that it's sort of the triggering of the abandonment feeling. You might think instead that you're just overreacting, or that you're too weak and it's too bad you can't control your emotions better, and you're annoyed with yourself because you're feeling hurt when you wish you could be more resilient, when actually what's going on is it triggered your abandonment feelings, which are involuntary. It's not something you can control any more than you can control your pupil dilation.
All right, an interesting concept. So I understand that there's an interesting story about your developing the idea of the outer child, that that the first mention actually came fairly late in an earlier book.
Yes. I was helping the victims of abandonment trauma, as I had been doing for many years, and the abandonment work came as a result of my own personal experience with abandonment, having been dumped, so to speak, by the love of my life of 18 years, my marital partner. And I really threw myself into the task of searching for really effective tools that would prevent the abandonment from having a lasting impact. How does abandonment have a lasting impact? It leads to self-sabotage. So you go through a horrible rejection or breakup, and then it affects your future relationships in the form of sabotaging yourself by overreacting to insecurity or choosing the wrong partner. So I was working hard to try to come up with the most effective tools possible to help my clients avoid sabotaging themselves in future relationships and in their diets and other and careers and other areas of their life. And out popped this concept of you have an inner child that's hurting, you have an outer child that acts it out inappropriately, and it just kind of all fell into place.
So is the outer child just generally meant to be kept under wraps? Is it a matter of regulating the outer child's behavior, just getting good behavior from the outer child? Should the outer child just simply not be expressed? Or, I mean, what's the general thrust here?
Well, you know, we all have an outer child, and because we all have a part of ourselves that is looking for immediate gratification, you know, the quick fix. It's looking for ways to reduce tension or to seek pleasure all the time. This is a part of us as human beings. So the idea is that we have an outer child, and whether we let it take control, do we let it have that third glass of wine when we know we should only stick to two, or should we let it have a second piece of cake, or should we let us chase after that unavailable person when we know that that only leads to heartache? So the outer child is the part of us that we want to gain control over, but the old method was willpower. And willpower is very, very difficult. It's a very rusty old tool that doesn't really work that well. However, there's other ways of going about it, which is to strengthen the muscle of the adult mind, to strengthen that muscle in ourselves that allows us to really make positive choices.
All right, much more to talk about with Susan Anderson. Her book is Taming Your Outer Child, Overcoming Self-Sabotage and Healing from Abandonment. We'll come back and talk more with Susan and take your phone calls and emails. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the program with Susan Anderson and you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Dr. Susan Anderson, a psychotherapist, now practicing for 30 years, generally assisting people with trauma, grief, and loss. She's written another book called Taming Your Outer Child, Overcoming Self-Sabotage and Healing from Abandonment. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments as we go through the discussion. 800-838-3760 anywhere in our listening area or by email jx@jeffnet.org. When we talk about abandonment, does it lead, and I doubt this is expressed ever consciously, but does it lead, Susan, to a situation where people are thinking, well, I've been abandoned once, therefore I'm not worth it, and that's what leads to the self-sabotage in other relationships?
When we feel rejected by someone, it usually triggers a lot of self-doubt. The feeling that we might be most conscious of is rage, anger at the person. But underneath the rage and anger is also a lot of feeling of I'm not enough, I wasn't successful enough, or I didn't assert myself enough, or I wasn't commanding enough, or I wasn't beautiful enough, or one of those. And so it creates a lot of self-doubt, and that self-doubt and sort of a beating ourselves up for letting it happen is what gives rise to the self-abandonment that then, in turn, gives rise to self-sabotage.
So is the outer child, as the actor outer, for lack of a better term that you've already mentioned, naturally on alert for hurts and slights and things like that?
Well, outer child is always looking for any excuse it can to take control. It wants control, and it wants pleasure, and it wants to reduce tension. It's just our pleasure-seeking, you know, it's the addict in the personality. It's the part that's always looking for mischief and to have its own way. So it's on the lookout, and when we have an uncomfortable feeling, it's looking to reduce the uncomfortable feeling. So if abandonment gives rise to uncomfortable feelings such as, you know, let's say we're recovering from a breakup and we're coming out of it, and now we're suddenly being attracted to the unavailable. Everybody who's unavailable seems to turn us on. That's the outer child trying to get some gratification from creating that feeling of being, you know, having infatuation, and we're we're now more attracted to the unavailable because we're used to feeling that rejection from the previous relationship. So outer child is just always looking for any way to seek pleasure and get immediate gratification. And if we're not sort of on top of it with a very strong adult self, the higher self, you know, we kind of let these things happen without realizing it.
So in trying to attain the unattainable, the outer child is trying to essentially replicate the conditions that led to the feeling of abandonment the last time around?
Well, yes, and what you're suggesting there, replicate, that kind of brings us to what trauma is, because abandonment is a trauma, and post-traumatic to abandonment, we commit these so-called repetition compulsions, where we recreate the scene. But we do it because it's very gratifying, because it gives us a chance to get it right the next time. It's kind of a reenactment this time. It's more under our control. It gives us titillation because we think maybe there's a chance. It arouses all those love feelings or, you know, feelings of attraction that are very pleasurable to feel. But they have a disastrous consequence. Only outer child's not sophisticated. It's outer child is a child. And doesn't care about consequences. Outer child just wants immediate, whatever feels good right now, and what feels good is repeating that kind of excitement of maybe I can win this person.
I'll get it right this time?
I'll get it right this time.
Wow. We were talking to Susan Anderson about her book, Taming Your Outer Child, Overcoming Self-Sabotage and Healing from Abandonment, on the Jefferson Exchange. Is the outer child then, Susan, an expression of the id?
The id is a very interesting thing because the id contains the emotions as well as the reaction. You know, the emotion and reaction to the emotions, that's the id. That's Freud's id. He didn't divide the id into two parts, which is the emotions and then the reactions. He didn't divide feelings from behavior or stimulus from response. He created a model that was very effective. It identified the feelings and the emotions together in one thing called the id. Now, what outer child does is it helps to divide the emotions from the behavior. So you have a feeling of, let's say, being sad, and then you have the behavior of crying to your friends and like that. So you have the feelings and you have the reaction to the feelings. So it separates feelings from behavior, and that's a very necessary thing to do to be able to really achieve your goals and turn your life around, to be able to keep your feelings and your behavior separate.
So when treating, do you focus on feelings first or modify the behavior first?
Interesting question. You focus on your feelings first because wherever there's a head-heart disconnect, you know, where you're not in touch with your feelings, which is very hard to do, to be in touch with your feelings. Sounds easy, but it's really tough. But when you have that head-heart disconnect, you tend to act out. Having said that, making that head-heart connection, that big you to little you, you know, to the inner child connection, outer child, taming your outer child is a doing program. So it's not like you think your way out of it or, you know, sort of theorize your way out of it. You get a handle on what you're feeling and then you do your way out of it by creating actions, an action plan, baby steps that actually are constructive baby steps that move you in the direction of what you really want, your real goals.
Why is it so hard to get in touch with feelings?
Feelings are a constant state. We're always feeling something. If it isn't bored, we're feeling sad. If it isn't sad, we're feeling expectant. If it isn't that, we're feeling happy. There's always something that we as human beings and even mammals are feeling. It's the way the body is feeling in life all the time. And to know what those feelings are, when so many of them are really cumulative feelings that come from such accumulation from birth on, it's just very, very difficult. And thanks to the fact that we tend to act them out, we're always scratching the itch before we ever even know what's causing the itch. So It seems so easy to just, well, come on, this is a feeling, figure it out, it's going on. But if we want a second piece of cake, it's very hard to be able to say, well, actually, I'm feeling a little uptight with this group of people, and that cake just somehow gives me something pleasurable to do to keep me distracted. We're not conscious of those things because we're too busy finding the pleasurable action that may not be in our best interest, but that keeps us distracted.
Now, you are quite clear, though, you are not about using outer child to let people off the hook for bad behavior.
No, outer child, in fact, in some personalities, can be so destructive that it can actually become the sociopath of the personality. It can rationalize anything. So even in a person who doesn't have any kind of sociopathic tendencies, it can rationalize having a third glass of wine, or it can rationalize buying a boat that we can't afford. An outer child can, in fact, lead to, in some people, to criminal behavior because the rationalization part of the personality is so advanced and the urges for pleasure are so advanced that the person can actually go overboard. No, outer child is a way to take responsibility for our tendency to rationalize and our tendency to take actions that are simply seeking pleasure, which can include greed, and not taking actions that are constructive on behalf of ourselves and other people. So it's a take responsibility concept.
Susan Anderson is our guest, a therapist of more than 30 years assisting people with trauma, grief, and loss. Her latest book is called Taming Your Outer Child, Overcoming Self-Sabotage and Healing from Abandonment. She'll point out the book is divided into three parts. You set up the framework in part one. We talk about finding self-sabotage in part two. And you set up an action plan in part three. Give us some useful age comparisons here. We've been talking about the inner and outer child. If the inner child is about 5, how old is the outer child?
Well, then you'd think of the outer child as sort of the annoying older sibling that says, oh, you're feeling sad? Okay, let me do something about that. It's the part of us that developed, you know, when we were kids and we were constantly going around trying to cope with whatever was happening in our lives, you know, making friends or feeling left out of a game or parents being too strict or not getting enough attention. The outer child develops in reaction to these feelings. So your inner child might be, you might think of your inner child as 3 or 4 or 5. You might think of your outer child as 8 or 9 or 12, 13, like the kid with its baseball cap on backwards, up to no good.
Let us take a call. We have Jeannie in Medford on the line. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with Susan Anderson.
Hi, Susan, I have a question, but first I'll tell you, I have a beautiful child at almost 70. I still love to swing on swings and go higher than the kids. And I always thought, I was told, and what you think, that there are basically only 4 emotions, mad, sad, glad, or scared. Do most emotions fall under that?
We could simplify them down to that, but I see emotions as a rainbow. There are so many different layers and shades of emotions. And if you're still able to get in touch with your child self and actually still be thrilled and enjoying and in bliss in moments of your life, I would imagine that you're dealing with a rainbow of positive emotions and able to sort of own and take care of, you know, many of your negative emotions.
Thanks for the call, Jeannie. Appreciate that. So we've already talked about the name for the grown-up version of us that keeps outer child behaving a little better. That's the adult self.
Yeah.
I notice you do pick a bone here with the inner child concept, an issue with essentially where it stopped and what it didn't address.
Well, the thing is that, you know, the inner child concept is missing that component of being able to separate the behavior out. So when we go, and, you know, there is such a thing as an inner child dialogue where we write a letter to our inner child or we speak to our inner child and say, I love you just the way you are. But when we go to do that, we tend to say the words, I love you, to our inner child, but underneath, we're actually harboring resentment because we're mad at our inner child because it's the basket case that acted so insecure and caused us to act like a jerk on the date and not make a good impression. Or it, you know, it started stalking our ex-partner and created anger. we're secretly angry with our inner child because it's hungry and had to eat two helpings of food when we're on a diet. Well, those acting out parts don't have to be blamed on the inner child. But what was lacking was there was no second voice. So there was no voice to blame the acting out behavior on. So it wasn't possible to really genuinely say, I love you, to the inner child until we could come up with some idea, some, you know, personification that allows us to blame the negative behavior on something outside of the self. So with outer child, you can finally say to your inner child, I love you because I love your feelings, no matter what they are. I don't care how insecure or scared you are or sad or whatever. I love you as you are. I will collect your tears in a cup, and you are my sweet adopted inner child, and I am taking care of you. You can say that, give it unconditional love, because now you're blaming all of those horrible behaviors that you're so annoyed with on your outer child.
Because it is the behavior you're seeking to correct and not
exactly.
The feelings.
Exactly. That's the only part we have control over, really, is our behavior, and it's the part that has caused the self-sabotage. That's what's in our way, not the feeling. It's the behavior around the feeling. So we can then blame it on the behavior and leave the feelings open for us to simply accept and embrace our own feelings.
But in terms of the feelings themselves, I mean, at some point should we apply a certain amount of pressure to if we just don't think they're particularly useful things to feel? Are all feelings useful?
I don't know if all feelings are so useful, because the feeling of, for instance, the abandoned inner child who can feel abandoned, that's a dreadful feeling. I would more or less say feelings are somewhat inevitable, and it's not our fault if we have them. But there is a tool that allows us to really work with those feelings in a very, very helpful way. So, yes, sometimes feelings cannot be quite so helpful, and they can certainly make life a little bit difficult, that's for sure. But the tool, the dialogue that allows us to exercise unconditional love and acceptance toward our emotional self, the inner child, allows us to actually have a dialogue and assuage those feelings and help those feelings, you know, change, help them dissipate a little bit. But you know what? The fastest way to help a feeling dissipate is to take a positive action. How many times have just getting in the car and going for a drive, or having a friend come over, how many times have we experienced a moment when we're really down, and just a change of scenery or a change of person can make a slight difference, a difference, maybe not all the whole difference in the world, but a little bit. So, yes, feelings are inevitable, but they're not destiny.
So here again, the behavior changes and the feelings can perhaps come along.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You do some group work, some outer child group work, you point out in the book, and you describe it as being raucous, good fun. What do you do in those groups?
Oh, yes. We get together. They're abandonment recovery outer child workshops, and we get together and we have a very honest sharing. It's very constructive and goal-directed, and we all have abandonment issues, so we all have a great basis to understand each other. And we all have outer child behaviors, and we have a very good time, you know, sort of owning up to our outer, they're all unique. Each person has a unique set of behaviors. And, of course, we enjoy sharing them because it's the first honest inventory that most people will ever do in a group. We start admitting things that we've never even admitted to ourselves before, and it just becomes raucous good fun. And it's also very inspirational to see other people identifying their behaviors and using tools that actually help to eradicate those behaviors.
You know, we haven't talked that much about the traits of outer child. I mean, you do write that the outer child loves the blame game, and I'm wondering as I read through some of these, if the outer child lacks a sense of humor.
Well, that's outer child can be a clown, mm-hmm. and can go for humor when they should be going for credibility. Let's say you have a strength in your personality, and your strength is that you have a tremendously wonderful sense of humor. However, you are now a lawyer, and you are a litigation attorney. Well, your sense of humor can help at times when you're pleading your case, but you certainly don't want to lead with it, you know? So your outer child is always nudging you to do the easiest, do what the habit. So the adult attorney would be kind of, you know, more or less trying to stay on top of his personality so that he's not using humor instead of credibility in order to get a point across. So there is humor, but the thing is, we want to be, in being goal-directed, outer child is always doing the easy thing, the habitual thing that can trump our goal. It's always having, you know, it's always having a moment of self-indulgence when we're trying to stick to a goal. We want to clean out the garage, and outer child is lounging in front of the TV set. And we join the gym and pay the fee and all of that, but outer child is always saying, go tomorrow.
So it's
outer child is a procrastinator, a people pleaser. It's always waylaying our goals.
All right, and the adult self has to step in and say, come on, kids, let's get the heck together here. We'll talk about a little more about how. Coming up in the next segment of the Jefferson Exchange, Taming Your Outer Child is the book. Susan Anderson is the author. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls and emails in a minute 15. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is a therapist, Susan Anderson, in practice now for 30 years, assisting people with trauma, grief, and loss. She's written several books, including this latest one, Taming Your Outer Child, Overcoming Self-Sabotage and Healing from Abandonment, in which she builds upon the earlier concept of the inner child. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the issue and the ways in which we deal with taming our outer child. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to talk to us by phone. That's anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760 or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There's an interesting sentence here in the discussion of the outer child and the outer child's traits, and it gets into self-centeredness, in which you write, self-centeredness is not something to be ashamed of. What do you mean by that?
As a matter of fact, for outer child, self-centeredness is age-appropriate. Mm-hmm. Because it's that age of self-centeredness. But, you know, it's perfectly natural for us to have self-interest. So becoming self-centered without using it in a way of self-sabotaging is a key, because it means finally acting in our own self-interest while keeping other people's needs in mind. You know, the outer child is not a selfish program, because we're human beings who need social connection. We need love and connection in our lives. So the actions that we take into account other people's needs as well as our own, without being people pleasers.
Ah, so it begins with me, in the sense that, you know, I have to take care of my needs before I can begin to, I'm aware of other people's stuff, but I got to make sure I'm whole and hale and hearty before I can move on to other people's stuff.
Yes, I have to be in touch with my feelings so that I'm administering to my feelings, so that I'm not acting them out inappropriately, and I'm not laying my needs at other people's feet. You know, if we don't have that under control, we tend to go to work and look to our boss to get approval, or we look to our peers for recognition or love, or we look to our partner to make us feel secure. We look to an external regulator to make us feel comfortable. We all do this to some extent, but some of us more than others. When we can address our own emotional needs, we don't have to look to our boss or our friends or our lover to feel secure or to get validation. We can give it directly to ourselves.
You say to keep tabs on the outer child, and in fact that you still keep a daily inventory of outer child characteristics?
The truth is, yes, the more you know about your own outer child, the harder it is to let that outer child sabotage you. So it's very helpful to maintain a daily inventory of your outer child behaviors. So at the end, you know, the next day or at the end of the day, you might do it at night, you might say, oh, here's my goal, and I let outer child buy a pair of shoes that I didn't need, or here's my goal, which is to, you know, stay on this diet, and I let outer child have too large a helping. So you actually, at the end of the day or the next day, you can actually cite your outer child as it kind of forestalled your goals, because the program that you need to be on is a goal-directed program. The idea is to resurrect those goals. Don't give up on them. Even put your dreams up on the screen of your mind. Resurrect those goals and follow those goals, and then watch your outer child try to sabotage you as you go through the day.
Now, the examples you gave were fairly physical manifestations. Could it also be something a little more psychic, like I intended to be straight with this person and then I cracked a dumb joke? Is that outer child kind of behavior?
Yes. You know, the whole thing is that outer child is always looking for the easy way. So let's say that you as an adult have decided you're going to talk to a friend about something, that a misunderstanding, and you're going to calmly bring it up. You know just how you want to do it. You're quite adult and you're sophisticated, and that's how you're going to do it. And you get into the conversation, and your friend says one over-defensive thing. Let's say your friend gets a little hurt, or, you know, sort of has a chip on his shoulder. And so all of a sudden, now you're saying things that you didn't intend to say. Your voice is raising, and you're bringing up the past. And that's exactly what you had decided not to do. So what's happened there is that your adult set out to do something, and an emotion was triggered, and your outer child said, okay, I'm in control now, I'm going to handle this, and decided just to be a hothead and bring up the past. So yes, it's very much into the psychological realm in terms of the people-pleasing or the overreacting and just not handling situations in the way your adult had planned.
There's an interesting take on abandonment issues here, which forces us to think about things like we self-abandon. Do we do that?
Yes. Self-abandonment is the way that we kind of move away from our own needs. If you think of what your ultimate goals are, let's say you have a goal maybe to write a novel, and you've never done that yet, and it's your goal. But somehow you've allowed different experiences to discourage you, or you've become workaholic, or you have many other focuses. But that goal is still important to you. In that sense that you have a goal that you haven't worked on, you could think of that as self-abandonment. You've abandoned yourself to the extent that it's a goal that's important to you. Usually we think of self-abandonment in terms of goals that are really, really important, such as fitness. We have a fitness goal, and we're not satisfied with the extent to which we have taken positive actions. We have a fitness goal, but we're not living up to it. To the extent that we don't get to the gym, or to the extent that we don't take that jogging, you know, exercise every morning, that would be considered self-abandonment. To the extent that you keep chasing the unavailable and getting bored or shutting down emotionally when someone is available, which is a very common pattern, very common. To the extent that you do that, that's considered self-abandonment, because you're not giving yourself mutual love. So there are so many ways that we abandon ourselves.
Self-abandonment sounds like it's passive, whereas self-sabotage is a bit more active.
Yes, self-sabotage is behavioral. Self-abandonment is emotional, and it's self-abandonment is something you can fix. You can actually re-adopt yourself and reverse self-abandonment. It is something fixable.
There is the obligatory brain diagram in the book. It seems like any discussion of where our stuff comes from needs a brain diagram. So where do our thoughts and fears of abandonment reside?
Well, you would say that the fear of abandonment and most of the our feelings and our fears and our needs, you know, our intense needs, come from the amygdala, which is the emotional center of the brain. And you could say, if it's more complicated than any brain diagram could show, but you could say, and I know I have one in the book, that the behavior, the habituated behavior, comes from, you know, a part of the brain that's part of the second, it's part of the limbic system, and that does not really give the whole picture. The behavior comes from so many parts of the brain, even including the hypothalamus. So it is a much more complex picture. Where it gets a little bit easier to spot is the emotional part, because that is the most primitive part of the personality, whereas behavior is elaborate. So yes, we can sort of pinpoint the emotional seat of the brain is that amygdala, which are those almond-shaped things in the brain that contain our emotional memory.
Susan Anderson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Taming Your Outer Child. Luke in Grants Pass just dropped off a question asking where your book can be bought. It's on New World Library. Is it in many bookstores?
It's in the bookstores and online.
All right. And in the book, and now as we talk about ways in which to do some exercises to get your outer child in shape, there's a function here called reciprocal dialogue. Tell us about that.
Well, now, you know, the idea is when you reverse self-abandonment, you learn to love yourself. But that is the most nebulous thing, love yourself. How do you do that? So this is an exercise. It involves a dialogue between your adult self and your inner child. And there has been inner child work for many years. Many people have done it. The difference here is that you're making sure not to blame, even unconsciously, your inner child for your behaviors. So you're really holding your inner child blameless, innocent. It's just your emotions, and having a dialogue with that allows you as an adult self to say, okay, I hear you. What can I do to help you? You are saying this to your own inner child, and you're creating these creatures. It's sort of using your imagination to create a multiple personality, you know, an inner child and an adult and an outer child. But you're saying to your inner child, what can I do to help you? And your inner child might say, I need you to find me someone to love, or I need you to please lose weight so I can feel beautiful, or whatever that is. So you're actually having a dialogue, learning what you can do, and taking adult responsibility for fulfilling that goal. It's a goal-directed program.
Does it take a while for people to really develop the adult self in this? I mean, because the fact is, as you mentioned, the outer child, if the outer child gets results sometimes through the behavior,
yes,
they keep doing it. So, I mean, it's a level of maturity you have to achieve, it sounds like, to be able to cast certain behaviors aside.
Yes, because, you know, the problem for most of us, and it's true for me as well, the inner child is too strong, too powerful. The inner child is too needy and too intrusive, and the adult is too weak. So the goal is strengthen the adult self, nurture the inner child, and eventually tame your outer child. That doesn't mean reject it. It means kind of being the boss and making sure your outer child answers directly to you so that you, the adult, are the one calling the shots and not your outer child.
I guess that should be obvious at this point why you named the book then Taming Your Outer Child instead of Disciplining Your Outer Child or
exactly.
Punishing Your Outer Child or any of the other variations that were possible here.
Yes, and workshop members have helped me with that because sometimes they say, I feel that I'm rejecting a part of myself, that I'm not being kind, I'm putting down my outer child. And through workshopping, you know, the concept way back years ago when it was first developed, the idea came out that we have to actually make peace with our outer child so that it answers to us and becomes a cooperative part of the personality.
At what point would you recommend that somebody make a judgment about whether they need a trained therapist to help work through this? I mean, they can certainly go through the exercises in the book, but some people might need a little more assistance than that.
I would say that stuckness, being stuck, is a very frustrating thing, and even people who are perfectly well-adjusted and happy can be very stuck in a bad pattern, in a habit. You know, it's a very common phenomenon. But if being stuck actually makes your life unmanageable, it creates unhappiness, it generates negative situation for your inner child, and this sounds a little bit bragging, but if you have used this program and you still are not seeing progress, because I think it's inevitable that you will see progress through the program, but if you still don't feel the progress is going fast enough, then going to therapy, having a sponsor or a coach or therapist can really speed things up, as can a group. But even if you're not struggling, going to therapy or having a sponsor or a coach can speed things up. So it's giving yourself a big favor to get outside help.
I want to ask about a couple more exercises before we go, and one of them is this Back to the Future exercise.
Oh, yes, that's a very, very powerful exercise. It's like a human bulldozer. What you do is you imagine that your goal, you use your imagination to imagine that your goal is already achieved, and you imagine what that would feel like. Then you also picture yourself using your imagination as strenuously as you can. It's a muscle, and this is very, very strong physical therapy for the brain. You use your imagination to picture yourself taking the actions that allow you to achieve the goal, so that you actually put that in the screen of your sense of future, and you imagine that you've already taken those actions, your goal is achieved, you're picturing it, and now you ask yourself, working backward, back to the future, what did I do to make this goal happen, as if it's already happened? And you come up with answers that can inform you what to do today to take baby steps toward achieving that goal.
Susan, is it that people with abandonment issues often, their imaginations work just fine, but their imaginations tend to work on imagining what other people are thinking, feeling, doing, rather than themselves?
Yes, they compare their insides to other people's outsides, or they use their imagination also to feel dread, which is very natural. When we have a sense of future, we think of, oh, I may never meet somebody, or, oh, I may never achieve such and such a goal. So the idea is we are going to naturally have our imaginations picture things that based on worry and envy and self-comparison. So why not use your imagination as a constructive tool, which you have to do very consciously and deliberately, in order to create images that allow you to work towards your goal?
So if somebody works their way through the exercises in the book, is this sort of a daily maintenance kind of thing as you are still doing? I mean, they're going to want to keep track of what their behavior is doing, their outer child through time?
Absolutely. It's an ongoing program, but you get results at least within the first few weeks and within 3 weeks really moving forward.
Susan Anderson is a psychotherapist and the author of Taming Your Outer Child. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thank you for having me, Jeff.